In 2022, Team Milk came together by sponsoring female marathon runners for the marathon in New York City. Today, they're more than 20,000 strong. In 2024, Team Milk is making an even bigger commitment to female runners and launching the only women's marathon in the U.S. designed for and by women. The inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
I think we can all agree the current political moment is fraught. But how does it compare to the other fraught political moments in history?
It felt for a time in part of that decade like everything was falling apart. Young people against old people, anti-war violence, peace movement.
I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. And this week, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about difficult times in America's history and how its people overcame them. The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Long Form Podcast. I'm Evan Ratliff and I am joined by my co-hosts Max Linsky and Aaron Lammer.
I was going out the door and these guys caught me. I had my bike helmet on, my pink do-rag on.
That pink do-rag is that's going to define your summer.
Let's put a picture of that up on the website.
That'll be in the show notes.
That do-rag's definitely going in the show notes. I'll show you the Amazon store where you can get it. We got a kind of unusual episode. Why is it unusual, Max?
It is unusual for timing purposes. I talked to Steve Kandel, who is the long-form editor of BuzzFeed. I talked to him a couple of months ago, February or March. I can't even really remember. And it had been a while. For a whole variety of reasons, we hadn't run it, so I invited him back, talked to him again. Spoiler alert, the first time when we talked, he's a young man, he's optimistic, hopeful about his time. Now just dark cynicism, despair.
Time passes.
It's not an easy game, the list game.
We talked at length about why he refuses to do lists.
If you're making a list of things to do next week, don't put listening to the Long Form Podcast on it because we will be taking our first ever inaugural week off for the 4th of July.
We did take weeks off for Christmas, but this will be the first 4th of July week we've taken off.
Inaugural one.
It's inaugural.
They could still listen to the podcast. They could listen to old ones.
Who wants to listen to an old podcast, really? We got a sponsor this week. That sponsor is Tiny Letter from the good people at MailChimp. We thank them for their ongoing support. If you want to support the podcast, we would very much appreciate a rating on iTunes. Leave a comment. Tell other people to listen. Here is Max and Steve Kandel.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Max.
How are things?
Things are okay.
It is nice of you to come over to my house. We were recording this at my house. This is the first time I've done this at my house.
It's nice of you to have me.
It's really nice to have
it's
you here.
You're sort of homey.
Let's talk about what you're doing with yourself these days.
Mm-hmm.
You are the long-form editor at BuzzFeed.com.
Yes.
At the website BuzzFeed.
A popular website for kids.
Website for kids, BuzzFeed.com. You're mm-hmm. the long-form editor. You've been in that job for...
4 months, maybe, actually 5 months.
All right. So 5 months in, at this point, what feels like, what's a BuzzFeed story? What's an ideal BuzzFeed story?
So this is the thing that's sort of been happening since minute one where, you know, you have to deal with like people making the joke about a long form BuzzFeed story means that's 1,000 cat GIFs, and
I'm so happy you said that first because I was I promised myself I was not going to bring it up.
Get it out of the way, and it happens all the time, and it's totally understandable, and that's fine, and you know, but like the one thing that I think that we've been kind of trying to use as a criteria, which I think it's confusing if I don't say it right, is like what would be the sort of you know, longer narrative, you know, nonfiction journalism equivalent of something that would like have the same effect on you as a bunch of cat GIFs. And I don't mean because it's cute, but I mean the kind of thing that makes you go, okay, I need a lot of other people to see this. Like that, the impulse that that sort of, you know, BuzzFeed banks on is the idea that if you see something, your gut reaction is going to be to have other people's, you want other people to know that you've seen it, you know, and that's like, that's what this viral stuff is. So then the question sort of became like, you know, when you read something that you really like, or I do, and I know you do, like your reaction is that you want other people to see it too. And that's sort of what they're built to do. What's the kind of thing that is going to sort of strike a nerve with people for whatever reason? Which is, I mean, really like a very fair question to ask of any story.
Right. I mean, I guess like, I wonder how that's different than, you know, like what editors at the New Yorker or GQ or Atlantic, like, aren't they also like, aren't they also trying to find stories that people are going to want to talk about?
No, I think that, you know, I can only speak to, like, you know, I was at Spin for like 6 or 7 years before this. And, you know, and actually it wasn't that simple. Like you had to think of like, you know, what makes sense for the brand, what makes sense for the timing, like what's coming out this month, what are the other pieces that are going to be in this issue. And so how do you know, if we have an old guy there, then we need to have someone young, you know, you're almost casting it. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of magazines are like that too, you know, they're so driven by release dates or, you know, or whether or not this fits what people's idea of what our, you know, magazine means. And I do think that, there's something kind of liberating about a place like BuzzFeed that doesn't, there isn't any sort of particular, it's not like for men of this demographic right. or, you know what I mean? Like
men who wear giant watches.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you take that out of the equation and you still need some sort of parameter. And then it really becomes like, well, you know, what's good? Like what would people like? Cause that's the internet. And it seems like such a basic thing. And I think I've said this before, and it had been sort of misunderstood at meaning like we're just sort of like trying to aim for some sort of lowest common denominator. And it's like, it's not that at all. It's actually like playing to, I mean, it's really just sort of a fancy way of and long-winded way apparently of saying like, you know, what makes the stories of things that we would sort of try and do are things that would just like plain old be good. And it really doesn't matter. Like, it just basically has to be, this kind of isn't something that I haven't read anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, therefore it's interesting, period. And like, and it seems like such an obvious answer, but I actually, you know, in my experience, like that has never been like the main criteria of deciding whether or not to do a story.
I want to just push you a little bit more on like, mm-hmm. on what good means. And I guess, right. 'cause like the kind of stories that people want to read, mm-hmm. in my experience on long form, the kind of stories that people want to read are slightly different than the kinds of stories that people want to share. Right.
That so, may be true.
I like, mean, sex and murder stories mm-hmm. are by far the most clicked, mm-hmm. but people don't often like, retweet the hell out of a story about porn.
Right.
But it's by far the most clicked thing. So there's a slight distinction there. But there are also those breakout stories, which are widely clicked mm-hmm. and widely read, widely shared. And I feel like the adjective that like applies to those stories is crazy.
Like the maybe, yeah.
Like the ones where people are like, holy shit. Like Michael, the one that like sticks in my head is that story about the like Russian movie set, the movie set that ate itself, that
yes.
Michael Idov story. Yeah. Like that story mm-hmm. came out a while ago, but that story was like, everyone I knew mm-hmm. was sending that shit around because they were just like, this is crazy.
That and the Stephen Roderick's The Canyons piece. And
yeah, totally.
The Lindsay that was like, story. You know, yeah. And both
that had like a low hand factor that's going to be tough to recreate.
Well, I mean, both of those things were impossible to recreate. I mean, they were completely singular situations. They could have only been that writer in that situation. And you weren't going to read anything else like it. And you know, obviously they weren't drawn up that way. I mean, sometimes you just have to be lucky enough to get yourself, you know, in the room and then hope that something great happens. But I mean, you know, for every two of those stories, there's, you know, 20 others that could have been that if only like, you know, I mean, like what if you'd gone on the Canyons and like, you know, Lindsay Lohan was like fine the whole time right. and the movie was pretty good and everyone got along. And, you know, that would have been, I don't know, that story would have been fine. It would have been kind of interesting, I guess. But
it wouldn't have been that story.
It wouldn't have been that story. Right. And you just have to, be able to put yourself in the situation where something like that might happen. But that's no like disrespect to either writer at all. I mean, that's a huge skill, is getting yourself in the room and being able to be there when those things happen and be the kind of person that that people will say those things to. I mean, that's huge. And so, you know, as far as the difference between whether something's going to be clicked and whether something's going to be shared, I mean, for me anyway, this is all like a work in progress. The idea of having that kind of information in front of you for me is like brand new,
right?
You know, and it feels to me a little bit like weekend box office a little bit. Like you put a story up and then like you're looking at the numbers, and after a day or two, there's a conversation like, this one isn't going the way we thought we would. And you know, it's a, what is it? And is it because the headline's like this, or did we sort of not put it up the right time of day? And there's, it's all sort of very different to me because, you know, where I'd worked previously, there, you know, you can put something up and you could see the numbers, but you know, very odd, like a cover story at Spin for the most part wouldn't go online, you know, or big, you know, bigger, you know, it was, or you'd put some of it online and
right, you're
and
still it, kind of judging by like letters to the editor and whether or not like your friends brought it up to you at the bar.
Exactly. I mean, and this was, you know, I'm talking about like a year ago, you know, so the idea that you could have this thing in front of you where you can look at it and be like, oh, this many people sort of looked at it, but this many people showed it to other people. And it, I don't think that there's like enough of a sample size yet to totally figure out what that is.
That's totally another type of like long form story. I feel like the story that like people share without totally reading, well, which happens a lot. Like you start seeing people like quoting like the first 300 words.
Yeah.
Amazing read.
Well, the other thing that's sort of been interesting about like the numbers you can get now too, is you can see how long people spend on it. So you can see whether it's something that people looked at really quickly and then shared, or whether it's something that people spent time on. And that's really interesting to me too, because I would actually rather have like, I mean, I'm not the one who has to sort of answer to numbers necessarily, but I'm much more interested in the idea that maybe not as many people read it, but they read it.
Is that, I mean, I know that maybe you just say that you don't have to necessarily answer for the numbers, but I'm interested
I
mean, you probably do on some level, but I'm interested in like where, what you think BuzzFeed saw, where they saw value in this kind of work. Like, is there value? Is one of the important metrics people spending a lot of time on a page, reading to the end, sitting on one URL for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes?
Maybe. I think to some degree. I mean, I don't... there's no sort of ultimatum to me that like, you know, these pieces have to have this kind of number, and that, I mean, or anything like that. I mean, I think the interest in you know, from BuzzFeed's point of view as to why they're doing this kind of thing is the same reason why they're doing a bunch of different things, because they can and because they're interested in it and because it's, you know, I mean, why do politics? Why have a business vertical? Just because you can't, you know, you can do a bunch of different things once they have, you know, they have the ability to do that. So I think it's really just like anything else. It's seeing how these kinds of stories can work in this kind of ecosystem. But it's not meant to sort of be like some sort of change in direction in terms of what the place is trying to do. This is all in addition to, not
right.
Instead
it feels
of.
Like just expanding the experiment.
Yeah, it's
like,
but it's getting, it's expanding in like 18 other different directions
right,
too.
Right. I mean, we were talking before we started rolling about like BuzzFeed's opening bureaus in Los Angeles and London. Like,
yeah. I mean,
the experiment's rolling in all these different.
It's not
ways.
Like it's some sea change. Like I'm like one person, you know, who's sort of doing this, and other people there working on it too, but there's also people working on a bunch of other things, and it's really it's not sort of meant to indicate that, like, you know, like it's no sort of change in direction in terms of like what the site's doing. It's just, again, it's going in a bunch of different directions, and it's all trying to see how different kinds of writing and different kinds of pieces could also have, like, you know, similar kinds of reactions as these sort of shorter, quicker ones. And it's, again, it's all just, everyone is sort of at the beginning of this process, just figuring out like how people find these kinds of pieces and how they read them and how they get distributed. I mean, this is all basically within the past 2 years, ever since the medium, the ability to sort of read these pieces in different ways other than just on a lap, just on a computer screen or just on paper, when those were the only two options, you know, it was a different conversation. But now that it's been sort of more, you know, normalized, that there's different ways to read these things, it's only like now a year or two that people are figuring out, okay, so this is the deal. So how is this going to work? You know, what are the different options? Like,
are you guys thinking about money at all? Are you thinking about how this stuff can pay for itself at all? Is that part of the conversation?
I mean, I feel like, you know, it's more expensive to do than the other stuff there. And like, I want to hold my own and I want to feel like I'm, you know, contributing to something that's doing well. I wouldn't want it. You know, I don't think anyone wants to be like, you know, the charity case anywhere that they work. You know, I mean, it's expensive, you right. know.
I mean, I think historically charity isn't the right word.
No,
but you know, features weren't, the back of the book wasn't what paid the bills.
No.
And so, I mean, I guess part of what I'm interested in is, you know, BuzzFeed's monetization strategy is sponsored content and pairing this stuff with brands. And so I'm interested a little bit in whether or not that's something you guys are thinking about with that is, longer stuff.
That is literally not a conversation that I've ever, it's literally never come up. I mean, it's like the only time I've even had that's even sort of crossed my mind at all is there's now like a vertical where all of these pieces now live. And while we were, before it launched, you know, there was like
BuzzFeed.com/longform.
It's actually, yeah. And BuzzReads is actually the cute name for it. But, you know, so while we were still sort of putting that site together, there'd be like, a, you know, big piece, and there'd be like a sponsored post right in the middle of that. I'd be like, oh, can we move that? And he'd be like, no. Like, that's where that goes. Like, that's what you're, you know. And it's like, oh, right, that's right. The whole point of this place,
right?
But as far as like having to incorporate that into any of the pieces themselves, that is literally, I've not heard like any talk of that at all. I don't, that's not like the plan for this. It's just they're just feature stories.
That's too bad, man. I was really hoping you were going to be like, oh yeah, we've actually figured that whole thing out.
No. I mean,
all of these stories are going to make tons of fucking money. And we're very excited to share that with the world.
Maybe I should be smarter to think about it that way. But there's no like plan afoot to all of a sudden do like, you know, a history of the grilled cheese brought to you by Craft,
right.
You know, like if that's happening, no one's told me. Well, it's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. You know, you can just pay me like a light royalty.
I'll,
you don't have to.
You, I'm gonna pay you in cheese.
Yeah, there you go. So what are the stories you've done that you've been excited about, man? Which ones have felt like they hit whatever this kind of like alchemy that you're trying to figure out?
I will say I was just thinking that before. Pieces that have done that have actually, you know, really done well. We did a piece maybe a month and a half ago that was sort of like a TikTok on these kids in Quebec who did the Golden Eagle hoax.
Yeah, that.
And like that, I think, is probably done. That's one of the ones that has been like the most successful in terms of like the sharing, the numbers and all that too. And I think that's because there is something to be said for if something is going to be something that has some sort of like tech angle, or you know, that I mean, that's sort of bread and butter for anyone who's going to already be on, you know, interested in BuzzFeed anyway. That seemed like kind of like right down the middle.
Yeah, that one felt like a really BuzzFeedy story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in a way, almost. But yeah, but I mean, of ones that we've done, we just put up a week ago. I mean, something that we've been working on for a really long time is Dave Pizner went to Jonesboro, Arkansas, in January. To meet with like all the families and survivors of this school shooting that happened like 15 years ago. And you know, the idea was basically, you know, seeing what happens to a community, like after this like sensational and sensationalistic thing happens to a small town and all the media comes in and, you know, what happens after all that clears out, like how do these people get their lives back together? And he'd been working on that for like a really long time. And he, you know, that was like a absolute beast of a piece that ran like over 10,000 words. And, you know, we're not like, oh, we have to hit we have an ad that has to go there, so we have to cut it off. And you know, one of the things he said going early on is like, you know, maybe he's not getting paid like the most that he's ever gotten paid on a piece, but the idea is like, he wants to be able to like, you know, really write it, you know, full on and you know, not have to like cut things out just for the sake of cutting them out and really sort of do these people justice, because this is the first time a lot of these people were talking about this, you know, and it was really hard to get them to talk.
So that's part of the pitch. That's part of your pitch to writers, BuzzFeed is a place where you can tell the story you want to tell in full. What else is part of your pitch? I mean, you've been able to get in these first 4 months, you've been able to get some pretty big yeah. name writers. I mean, Michael Mooney has a story on the site right now. Mm-hmm. Natasha Vargas Cooper did a pretty incredible story for you guys. What's your pitch?
It's just that people will see it. You know, that's a really big deal, actually, because, you know, sometimes you write something and you work really hard and you've been editing something and then it's finished and it goes in a magazine and you don't really know. You know, you don't know who bought it. You don't know who, you know, I can't think of how many pieces I've worked on, you know, not just written, but edited and worked really hard on, spent a lot of time, and then it's just out and you just don't really know. Like you know, you were saying before, it's like maybe you get a letter from the editor or I don't know, maybe there's a couple comments if the site, if that piece winds up online.
Right. That's like
which isn't necessarily a guarantee depending on where you work.
Right. That's like the paywall roulette at the New Yorker.
Totally.
It's like you work 8 months on a piece and then you don't know whether or not it's going to be online.
So, you know, what we have instead is like, well, here's, you know, it'll go online. We'll make it look good, and you know, and it has the full force of BuzzFeed.com behind it. You know, there's built-in eyeballs, and then there's the you know all the other things it does to get to be able to like bang the drum and get people to see it. You all have working in your favor.
What about you? Are you doing more or less work? Is your actual day-to-day job how is it different than when you were working at a print magazine?
There's something about I was talking about this with someone the other day that I do kind of miss the rhythm of a magazine.
Right. Cause I mean, it's not like you guys are posting your story of the week every Wednesday at 11.
Pretty close. Actually. It got a little thrown off cause with the Jonesboro thing, we were trying to actually hit what was like the 15th anniversary itself, but we've been kind of on like a Thursday night, 11 o'clock.
What's the theory on 11 o'clock?
That's a Ben Smith thing. He think, you know, from the political world, like, you know, people are weirdly in front of their computers at 11 o'clock at night, you know, when they're after their home and, you know, and, but I mean, the way that we're sort of thinking of these is like, these are like, you know, essentially Sunday Times magazine stories. And that's kind of the model that we've been using with these, and that's sort of how we sort of have been thinking about them.
Are you finding that that like mirrors the consumption patterns? Like, are people reading this stuff at night and on the weekends more than you would think, or more?
No,
than
less than we would think. The numbers are sort of all over the place, which really? Is really kind of interesting too. We thought we had it figured out, and you look at the numbers, and it doesn't. You know, it's different with different stories. It might have to do with who retweets something at a certain time. It's right. really, it's like, you know, it's amazing to have all that sort of data in front of you.
But yeah. How often do you like dive into that data? Swimming in there?
I do a little bit, but it, you know, I don't know what some of it means. I mean, everyone's just sort of figuring it out. But the other thing is, it's like, it's so inconclusive. Like you'll have a couple weeks where it seems like there's a pattern and then the next story, it's totally different and you're trying to figure out why. And I think that like, I think there's a lesson there too. It's like there isn't really a science to this. It's interesting to be able to see and figure it out. I mean, just from a strictly from a anthropological standpoint, in a way, like figure out when do people want to read. You know, like what people, you know, people from what part of the country are going to read this kind of story versus that kind of story. You have all that information in front of you. Maybe after a year of doing these, we'll have more of, you know, of this in front of us and we can actually sort of gauge. Right now, you sort of look at it every time I think, you know, we have something figured out, it'll change, you know, not for the better or for the worse, but just sort of be different. For me, the idea of doing something on a weekly basis and keeping it to a certain time is it gives that sense of a deadline.
Yeah.
That I feel is really useful and helpful and kind of reminds me of closing a magazine, you know,
right,
like,
right.
Like on a Wednesday night or on a Thursday night, it's essentially like me and John Guerra, the designer, like sort of going back and forth, and like putting the piece together. And to me, that feels like closing a little bit, you know, and I like that.
You mentioned that like you're sitting there on late on Thursday nights with a designer.
Yeah.
How important is design in what you guys are thinking about and what you're trying to do? And
hugely important, I think. There's a lot of things we, I mean, the one that actually probably had the most elaborate work done on it was the first one we did because we had the most time with
it. That Atari story.
Yeah. And, I mean, even something like, I mean, that was like white type on a black background. That was something that like the developers had to come up with. I definitely feel like every one of these pieces should have something that feels like sort of special and unique and specifically designed for it. Art is a huge part of the story.
I think that idea also carries with like what you were talking about earlier and sort of like debundling this stuff, and every story is sort of its own standalone piece.
And also, you know, like you have to wave your arms a little bit to get noticed, I think, you know. There was a piece maybe a month ago that I absolutely loved that Amanda Petrusich wrote. She went down to the this like python hunt in Florida, and like the piece itself, I mean, our worry for minute one was like it's the kind of thing it's like kind of catnip for a magazine writer, like, oh, yeah, go to Florida.
There were a couple of magazine writers down there at the python hunt.
There were a couple, and we sort of, and one or two of those things had come out after we'd already started working on that, and that was like a thing that we went, it's like, well, what do we do? Like, you know, like it's still a good piece, you're still a great writer. And then it's just like, well, let's just do ours like better, or do something about it that feels more, you know, unique. We're not trying to like pretend that we're like inventing this idea or that we're the only ones doing it. But like, for example, with this piece, like the New York Times had done a piece on it, and it was a pretty big piece, and gave all the background about, you know, the problem with these pythons, the Everglades, and how they came up with this hunt as a way of thinning out the population. And it had, you know, a lot of the same sort of background and footwork that that ours did. But then the last paragraph is like one of like the stake hunters saying to the writer, you should come with us. And it's like, haha. And that's like the kicker, you know, whereas like our piece was like, why is that the kick? Like, that's our first sentence. Right. Like, why would you go not
go with the python
hunters? Yeah. Why would you, why is that a joke? Go out there, get a pillowcase. And so, you know, and we go into it knowing that we weren't going to be the only ones doing this, but what could we do to make it feel more unique? And like the, you know, there's a bunch of like, we commissioned a bunch like little, you know, illustrations and made these little gifs of snakes, and it was looked cool, you know, and it was just sort of it looked like the BuzzFeed version of that. And I should add that I don't mean that in a pejorative way at all. I mean, like they had this character of like with the gifs and the, and like, you know, in a very, there was something very like characteristic about how the artwork was for that, and it just made it feel like that was definitely like our version of this story, and I felt like that was hugely important to have that element with it. That's right. What helped sort of distinguish it from what we knew was going to be a bunch of other pieces about that event. And I think that the art is hugely important to that stuff, and you know, for other sort of more news related things, like, you know, you had mentioned Natasha Vargas Cooper writing about this like, this 10-year-old kid who shot his father, who was like a Nazi leader. And, you know, that thing was like way more sober, and, you know, you didn't really have photos you could work with because the kid had never really been photographed. And like, you weren't going to do GIFs of that one. So that right. one was really just more like, let's get a couple good, simple things and have that be about the story. And that's fine. Like that.
You guys are starting to there was some similar design elements with that one in the Jonesboro story, I thought, were like kind of like somber images and sort of,
yeah, but also, I will say, with the, except for maybe one pickup photo with the Jonesboro one, you know, that was original photography. Like, we hired a photographer to go down and, you know, go, you know, they had lights, and they, you know, they, and that to me feels also important. It just feels like you're thinking about it as a package, and you're thinking about it the way a magazine editor would think about it. Like, what else is going to be with it? Like, what's the headline that's going to match the photo? You know, and I think that there's a little bit of an expectation if you're trying to put yourself out there as like, well, okay, print magazines may not be around anymore, but the things that you expect and like about that experience can still be like either replicated or maybe in some ways improved upon. Like, it's still not going to be the same tactile thing, but there's definitely things about the way art or photos and words in a particular kind of story, you know, play off one another that we're used to experiencing, and like, there's no reason that has to go away. Like, it shouldn't, you know? And so I think people appreciate when they notice that that step isn't skipped.
It's interesting when you're saying that you feel like you need to wave your arms a little bit, because I feel like I have never seen a job opening hyped the way that your job opening was hyped. Like the fact that that BuzzFeed was hiring a long form editor was like a news story in and of itself.
Yeah, I don't know, and I feel like I'm almost like the last person to ask about that too, because I don't totally, you know, like I understand it, but I think, you know, the way I've sort of thought about that is I think people are just sort of excited at the idea, and I don't think it has anything to do with BuzzFeed necessarily, and it certainly doesn't have anything to do with me. I just think it's the idea that this thing that, you know, after however many years of like the sky is falling, anytime that there's something where it looks like something is growing, people are just interested because everyone has a stake in that, you know? And you know, BuzzFeed happens to be a place that's been like doing well, and people have their eye on it, and they're curious what they're going to do with that momentum and those resources. And in 2009, when magazines were folding and all this stuff was happening, it was really like, what are we going to do when we grow up? You know, like this stuff's going away and there's nothing replacing it, you know? So what happens? And now it's all of a sudden, like for the first time in a few years, it's like, okay, well, that's one option. This thing's another option. And yeah, it's just after so many years of like, well, journalism is dead, magazines are dead, print is dead, everything's dead, that the idea of like, you know, all of a sudden like, well, actually, it's not dead. It's just moved. Now it's over there. People are like, oh, okay. And that's like a huge value, you know, that's like, you know, you just see people's ears cock up like a dog, like, oh, okay, well, then we were wrong. And then everyone sort of scuttles over. So it just feels to me like it's like the beginning of a bigger story that just happened to be BuzzFeed sort of starting that. That's fine. But I feel like that's happening even in the past few months since this started. I feel like there's a, you know, probably a dozen other things that are just as important and just as exciting. And, you know, a year from now, it won't even, hopefully it's not even something that people talk about at all. And it won't be a news story. It won't be a media story. It'll just be, this is how things are now.
I hope that also means that you'll be doing the history of grilled cheese. Cause I think that's actually,
yeah, well,
sponsored by Kraft.
It's also ka-ching.
Yeah. You know? That's what I'm saying. And then it's a spinoff and it's a whole website about cheese.
Yep.
Ooh. I mean,
Buzz cheese,
man. I feel like you owe me a drink after this podcast.
Yeah, I do.
Steve, thank you very much, man.
Thank you.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Max.
Hey, man. We talked a while ago. It was I don't even remember when it was now.
It was cold out, and it's no longer cold out.
Yeah, it was definitely cold out.
It was a different season.
Yeah, it may have even been a different year. It was definitely it was a different era.
It was a different era.
It was a different moment in time.
It was this calendar year.
It was this calendar year.
I don't know if it was this fiscal year.
Yeah, I think it definitely wasn't this fiscal year. Anyway, you were in the office, and I thought maybe like since you're here, yeah, we check in. We see how things are going.
What's changed? What's up with me?
When I talked to you 2 months ago, you were wide-eyed, optimistic, hopeful,
yep,
enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I'm
beaten down.
Beaten down.
It's over.
All of the cynicism is here.
Yeah. No. It's been going well. I think the best thing that I can sort of say about it is that it's not even something that like gets talked about or thought about. It's just like it's sort of settled into like a weekly groove, and I don't feel like, you know, we have to spend half our time like justifying our existence, which is nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's just we put up stories and people read them, and some read more than others, and that's kind of it. And it's just like, I don't know. That's sort of it, it didn't happen right away.
It took a second.
It took a minute, but
did it take you a second to adjust to being like the only adult in that office?
That's always a little that's definitely an adjustment, being around that many people that are that young. You know, and realizing that like I'm the one who doesn't get the jokes, you know, like that's, it's really.
But now you're just like riding the dad style.
I you just sort of have to own it at a certain point, not own it too hard, but just sort of know that like,
that I don't need to get the jokes. There's a dignity in not getting the jokes. You know, there's a dignity in going home to your more than one child,
to your multiple offspring,
actual children, and you know, and that's fine.
One thing we talked about a bunch 2 months ago was about like the kind of story you were looking for, mm-hmm. and the way you described it to me was like you were looking for stories that were shareable, just like other stuff is shareable on BuzzFeed. And have you guys done anything recently that really hit that groove? Like, have you done the like perfect BuzzFeed long form story
yet? You know, it's funny because they're not always the ones that I always expect. Like, there's a couple that I'm like, oh, this is a home run, and there's others where I'm not as sure about. But I mean, there have been a couple that have been like bona fide. Wow, that's just a lot of people read this thing, and I think the biggest one we've done so far is this thing that that Jessica Testa, who actually is on staff at BuzzFeed, wrote. She had last year, like last September, had when there was this car chase in Arizona that ended with the guy getting out of the car and shooting himself on the air on live television. She had posted that video on BuzzFeed, and you know, they caught a bunch of shit for it. And then, you know, there was this idea, like, hey, everyone sort of watched this, you know, viral video. This guy killed himself and on Fox aired it. And that's all this, you know, crazy commotion. And the idea of actually finding out, like, what actually happened there. Like, this was a person. People don't know why, you know, why was he doing this? Like, what led up to that? And so she went to Arizona and sort of did, like, a TikTok of his, like, last day and hung out with his sister and really found out, like, what happened. And not totally as an apology, but really as, like, a look, you know, so we were partially responsible for this aspect of the story, and now we're sort of filling in the gaps there. And that did, like, that's been the biggest one so far.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's, like, that's encouraging on, like, a ton of levels.
Yeah, and it absolutely was. Yeah, it was like really encouraging. And then something we did a couple weeks ago is this this piece about this Iraq War medic who came back with like super severe PTSD and became a bank robber.
Yeah, that story. The other thing we're talking about in that interview a couple of months ago is like you're kind of looking for the crazy story, mm-hmm. and that story.
Yeah,
that one was a pretty easy sell.
And that, you know, so. Yeah, but the Jordan Romero one that Jessica wrote, that's been the biggest one so far. I think second, or sort of right up there also, is this piece that Natasha wrote about the big dildo factory in the Valley.
Right. Well, I mean, how else is that going to do?
Yeah.
You got no other options for how that's going to do.
That was a home run. And
Let me just go back to Jessica's story really quickly, because mm-hmm. I didn't realize that she was the one who had posted that video mm-hmm. originally. How does it feel to be working at a place where the person who can, like, throw up a YouTube video and cause a bunch of outrage then has the space or the time or the money or whatever else to go there and report the story? Like,
You know, okay, so you were asking, like, what would be the perfect, like, BuzzFeed story. And I feel like without sort of boxing it in, I feel like there is something to that because things happen so quickly and things get covered so quickly and really important things get sort of reduced to a meme. And that's something that BuzzFeed, you know, traffics in, whether it's responsible for it or not. The idea of then sort of stepping back and sort of saying, okay, wait, that what actually happened there? It's something that people know about, but they don't really know what happened. That, like, there's probably a dozen a week where things like that happen, where it comes all across, like, our collective radar,
right?
You know, but we don't really know what that was about, and then, you know, we move on to the next one. The ability to sort of step back and say, like, actually, that thing there, like, let's look at that. You know, it's not like it was like this preconceived strategy, but it makes so much sense to be able to go do that, and you know, and you've had people on staff that sort of already know this stuff and already sort of engaged in it and were sort of thinking about it the first time around.
Right.
And there's a couple, you know, there's a couple others that are in the works like that. And there's a couple others that we've sort of done along those lines too. And I wouldn't say that it's like necessarily like a template, but that there is something to the way we sort of process news now that makes sense for that, where we're getting all this stuff so quickly and in such, like, you know, short sort of blasts, the ability to sort of think later, like, okay, that thing there, like, what was the actual resonant point of that? Like, why was that interesting? Like, why did that capture our imaginations for 4 whole hours
right.
that day?
The are you getting more pitches?
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel like there could be more, though. I don't really know. I mean, it's crazy. It's like there could always be more.
Yeah.
There could always be more. On one hand, I like look at the schedule and it's like I've kind of have stuff slated into like October already. But at the same time, I want more. I want other writers. I want different things. It would be great. The idea of feeling like I have more than I know what to do with is good.
Yeah, and you're not quite there.
Getting there. It's pretty, you know, it's like there's definitely, like at any given time, there's a bunch of stories that I could be working for, you know, it sounds like not doing a lot, like one a week at a place that does like, you know, 600 posts a day.
It sounds like a lot to me, man.
It does. It's weird, but in that climate, it's amazing how you can sort of feel like you're not working as much as other people. It's just a different process than other, you know, you see how much stuff people are cranking out and then you sort of feel like, I'm sorry, I'm only doing one. But I also know that what is going into it is different also. So
are you like is the section like a curio in the office? Like are people, I mean, you've had a couple of BuzzFeed staffers write pieces mm-hmm. for you now. Are people eager to do that?
Yeah, no, and that's been happening since minute one. It just takes a long time because everyone's responsible for like
a fucking ton
bunch of other stuff. And it takes even pieces. I've only written one piece in 7 months, and I have two or three others that are in various phases of disrepair. And it's hard to like carve out the mindset to sort of sit and write and also do like the daily grind stuff. So for that's like the biggest thing I think for people on staff is figuring out that like that time distribution and you know, and also the concept of deadlines when it's not like it's not like you have to hit a print deadline,
right? Right.
Where like you have to do it by then, otherwise it can't be in the magazine. There's no way to sort of like replicate that like real world urgency
right.
with these things.
You can't
too.
Really like hold them to the
yeah.
Fire.
It's like, yeah, dude, you know, I need you to hand it in a week from Thursday, and it's like, oh, but then there's everyone's got a lot of, you know, everyone's got like a lot of things going on every day, and so that's been one thing that's been interesting to figure out. But it's been great because it's like, you know, it's a room full of like insanely talented, smart people.
Yeah, you've got all these insanely talented, smart young people coming in, like wanting to do the mm-hmm. stuff you do. Do you have any urges to like? Have you put together like the like?
I haven't.
48 ways.
No,
you know
I
you're
haven't.
The,
and I'm like, and I will
father of two in an office. At
Ben actually I think wanted me to do something like that. And that terrifies me because I actually don't know how to do it. And I do think it's harder than people think. And that's like. You know, people just sort of look. I worked at Blender, which was like, you know, I worked at Maxim and at Blender, which were essentially BuzzFeed before BuzzFeed.
Well, that was, you know, the rant that Ben Mathis-Lilly went on, mm-hmm. I thought was fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
And like the point he was basically making was like, people have been doing content designed to get attention for eons.
Look at every magazine cover line from the years, you know, 2000 to 2007 when they stopped existing. And they all have giant numbers on them.
Right.
161 CDs reviewed. The 38 craziest movie villains ever. I mean, this is not anything new. And also, they're hard to do well. They're easy to do badly. They're hard to do well. And the more people try to do them and think it's easier because they think it's easy, the more it becomes incumbent on people who do these things to do them well. So I don't take that for granted like at all. I don't think that's like, yeah, I mean, I
think you should pitch one, man. I think you should do one. Get in the spirit.
I might. But yeah, so, you know, I think that people have this idea that it's like, oh, that stuff, you know, like, you right. know, it's like, are you kidding me? Like I literally owe my entire career to the existence of quick, pithy lists. I did them for years. I work at. I happen not to do them at the place that I work at now. The place that, but you know, it's that's what Blender was. And it's funny because it would be fun to go back and like see all the shit that Blender must have caught at the time for like dumbing down music journalism, even though it had some of the smartest writers, and I don't mean me. But I mean, like, any issue of Blender was like a murderer's row,
right,
of like the best music writers alive, you know, coming, like, writing, like, about, you know, doing lists. But they were like smart and well done and funny and researched and not just like plucked out of thin air, and took a ton of work. But I mean, like, it, Josh Ells, Jonah Weiner, Craig Marks, Rob Tannenbaum, Douglas Wolk, Adam Higginbotham. I mean, like, it was crazy. Clark Collis. I mean, those are just people on staff. And,
right.
And, you know, it's a crazy amount of talented people doing these things that everyone else would look at and be like, oh, it's a list. But, you know, lists are hard. Anything good is hard.
Anything good is hard. I think that's a decent way to end.
Okay.
Anything good is hard.
Okay.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Okay. Thanks for having me again.
Again. Second time. All right.
Thanks for listening to Longform. I'm Max Linsky. My co-hosts are Evan Ratliff and Aaron Lemmer. Our editor is Lauren Kirchner, and our intern is Chelsea Edgar. Thanks very much to BuzzFeed's Steve Kandel for coming in not once, but twice to talk to us about what he's doing over there. They're doing good work. Go check it out. BuzzFeed.com/longform. And starting today, all of BuzzFeed's long stories will be available in the Longform app for iPad. Go get it. It's only $2.99. It's in the App Store. App Store, part of iTunes. When you're in iTunes, go to the Longform podcast page, rate us, comment, say nice things. We really appreciate it. Have a great 4th of July. We'll be back July 10th. Okay.